Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself, presented to you by Hyundai. All right, happy hump day, happy Wednesday. All right, we have a fantastic show planned for you today. Tim Brown, the Raiders great, the Hall of Fame wide receiver. We're going to pull up at his crib, talk some Raiders football, the Las Vegas Raiders. But we'll start by going out to Bucky Brooks' crib. Bucky's going to join us. Of course, Bucky, a noted our professor of football. We're going to start with Aaron Rodgers and new news on the Packers quarterback. Brett Favre today, in an interview on Rich Eisen's show, had some very fascinating things to say about Aaron Rodgers, including saying that the Packers' drafting of Jordan Love and not drafting of a wide receiver, that the Packers have burned a bridge with Aaron Rodgers, and Brett predicted that eventually Aaron Rodgers would leave the Green Bay Packers. I don't know who could be a better expert on this than Brett Favre. He was once the legendary quarterback. They drafted a young guy behind him. He eventually left the Green Bay Packers. Favre said he actually has talked to Aaron Rodgers. Wouldn't characterize completely Aaron Rodgers' feelings, but said that Aaron Rodgers wasn't happy with the decision and was a little bit surprised when they drafted Jordan Love. He was not expecting that. All right, Marcellus, do you agree with Brett Favre that Aaron Rodgers will eventually leave the Packers over this Jordan Love decision and the 2020 NFL draft?
Absolutely, I agree with Brett Favre. Even though this does have a tinge of Will Smith as Chris Gardner in The Pursuit of Happiness, when you only see life through your experiences. And look, Brett Favre been through this, so he only sees how it's going to end in Green Bay like it ended for him. But if you look at the numbers, this is going to be a two-year plan where they're stuck with Aaron Rodgers. If you look in terms of motivation for Aaron Rodgers, when should he depart? He knows that that day is coming. I'm not sure he's rooting for that day, but it doesn't matter what your rooting interests are. It's inevitable. Once the numbers are satisfactory in terms of what the Green Bay Packers have to eat in dead money, which is going to be 2+ years, Jordan Love, if he looks like anything that they want and desire on that football field, then the transition will be complete. But he won't finish his career absolutely as a Green Bay Packer.
Oh, the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking, Marcellus. We've been in the room before. We've been in a position room where they trotted in the number one pick. They trotted in the first rounder. It's time for us to understand that Aaron Rodgers is going to move on from the Green Bay Packers at the end of 2021 or 2022. This is what great organizations do. They're always thinking ahead. And the Green Bay Packers have had about 30 years of quarterback stability because they were forethinking. They were able to think ahead when Brett Favre was there, and they took Aaron Rodgers. And now it's the same situation with Aaron Rodgers. Make no mistake about it. Aaron Rodgers is a declining player. He's 36 years old. 2017 and 2018, he suffered injuries. In 2019, he had the lowest passer rating that he's had since 2015. At some point, the Green Bay Packers have to make sure they have a quarterback in place. And it is smart to get one now, because for a season or two, he can learn, he can master the system. So when he has his opportunity, he's ready. Look no further than the situation in Kansas City with what the Chiefs were able to do with Alex Smith and Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes was there. He was able to get ready. Pat Mahomes turned around and had a Super Bowl. He had an MVP season, then a Super Bowl season. I think the Green Bay Packers are getting the next guy ready because they understand that their quarterback, their veteran quarterback, is beginning to regress. You want to make sure you have someone ready to take over.
Listen, the only thing I disagree with y'all about is timetable. And I'm not predicting Aaron Rodgers gets traded immediately, but I believe Aaron Rodgers is on the trading block. If somebody blew the Packers' doors away right now with a trade offer, I think they would make that move. I think that Aaron Rodgers, this is his final season in Green Bay. I don't think he'll get traded this year. But after this season coming up, Aaron Rodgers moves on, because Aaron Rodgers is going to want to move on. It's just like what Favre said. They burned a bridge. Aaron Rodgers does not agree with Bucky Brooks. He does not believe he's in decline. I don't think Brett Favre believes Aaron Rodgers is in decline. I think Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and a lot of other objective parties believe the Packers haven't properly supported Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is going to demand, let me get out of here while I still have a chance to go someplace else and win and prove that these guys held me back. Aaron Rodgers at 36, 37, I think still has a lot of value in the National Football League. If the Colts hadn't made a deal for Phillip Rivers, my God, to me, they would be trying to go all in on how can we get Aaron Rodgers to Indianapolis with a team we think is ready to win now. He could be our quarterback for the next 4 years. Aaron Rodgers still has a tremendous amount of value, and while he has it, I think he's going to force his way out of Green Bay in the next 12 months.
I can't see that happening. You got to understand, one, that Jordan Love was a project, and that project needs grooming, and that grooming can't be in any better place than under Aaron Rodgers in that situation if you're going to hand over the baton. Two, there's still a jury out if Jordan Love is even going to live up to the hype that he has. He had a bad last year at Utah State. We understand he lost his top three receivers, his coach, his OC. All those things considered, it still was a reach to some that Jordan Love would be that guy. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, you don't have to look over your shoulder necessarily because Jordan Love is not that close to you. There is rooting motivation to get him close to you because they like his personality better than yours, Aaron Rodgers. But the production is yet to be seen. So I can't see Aaron Rodgers being in a place emotionally so disturbed that he wants to leave a situation that he helped create. I don't think he's going to force his way out.
I think this is part of a bigger plan. It's a bigger plan for the Green Bay Packers to build the kind of team that they feel is necessary to be able to compete in this new NFC, actually in this new NFL. I think when they took those two whoopings against the San Francisco 49ers, Matt LaFleur had to look at his mentor pummeling him with the running game and the Shanahan system, which is the outside zone run and the stretch bootleg and play action combination. Here's what no one will talk about when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is difficult to game plan for because the majority of his plays come off the script. So when you're a play caller, it is hard to call plays when your quarterback likes to improvise. We saw it last year with Matt LaFleur. We saw it in previous years with Mike McCarthy. What we're now seeing, coaches have a tough time coaching number 12. And so if you can't coach him, you replace him. And so Matt LaFleur is bringing in Jordan Love and A.J. Dillon and some of these other guys so they can run the system that they want to run. He has success when he saw it in Atlanta with Kyle Shanahan having success. He saw Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay have success with the Rams and the 49ers respectively running the system. He wants to run his system. And if Aaron Rodgers won't comply, he will get out the way and Jordan Love will run it the way that he sees fit.
I'm going to tell you the other thing I think is missing here is, look, Matt LaFleur and the general manager of the Green Bay Packers, Brian Gutekunst, they believe Jordan Love is a great quarterback because they went up in the draft to go get him when they really didn't have to. Yes, he had a bad last year at Utah State. I'm not comparing him to this guy, but there is another quarterback who had a bad senior year and was dogged by rumors. He was a party boy, and he fell to the bottom of the first round of the draft. His name was Dan Marino. He had a lot of hype after his junior year, fell to the bottom of the draft. The Miami Dolphins got him. Don Shula believed in him. I'm not calling Jordan Love the next Dan Marino, but clearly to me, Matt LaFleur and these guys believe in him and think he can play and perform at a high level. Everybody that got drafted, there's a mystery about them. Who knows if they're going to live up to the hype? But we know the Green Bay really believes in this guy, and they're going to bend over backwards and do everything in their power to make him successful. Let's move to this final question as it relates to Aaron Rodgers. If he does not win another Super Bowl before the end of his career, who would you blame, the Packers organization or Aaron Rodgers, for that failure? You can argue either side. Had the Packers given him enough support, or has Aaron Rodgers been too difficult to fit into a team environment and do what Tom Brady did in Green Bay? Marcellus, who would you blame, the organization or Aaron Rodgers?
Well, you said I could blame either side. How about I blame no side? I mean, damn, he got a championship. And if we look around, Aaron Rodgers only been a starter for 12 years. Yeah, he's been in the league 15 years, but only a starter for 12 years. And half of those, Tom Brady stole the championship. So you're down to six. Then you get Peyton Manning, get a couple. You're down to four. You get Drew Brees out there. You're down to three. The point is, let's blame probability. Let's blame the math. But this whole notion that he didn't have enough weapons around him, when I'm watching him throw the ball to Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, I'm like, sounds like some weapons to me. Maybe not drafted all in the first round, but they turn out to be some ballers. And then people like you, Jason, always remind me that receivers don't help you win championships. We talk about players today, whether it's Odell Beckham or it's the Antonio Brown or if it's the Hopkins out there, even Larry Fitzgerald. Or we could go to some of the greats and T.O. and Randy Moss, etc. So the point is, I think that Aaron Rodgers has done a tremendous job based on where he is. He's in a place called Green Bay. And a lot of people want to throw around Title Town. This ain't the 60s. No free agents want to raise their hand high in the sky to go to Green Bay, so they suffer. They've won two championships with two all-time great quarterbacks in Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. And that's it. And I think that's actually what you should expect, or even exceeding expectations. Brett Favre threw 127 career touchdowns to first-round receivers. Aaron Rodgers threw one. And they have the same amount of championships. So I don't think this is really a blame in terms of asset conversation. I think this is an appreciation conversation.
No. Haven't spent 3 years in Green Bay playing there. I'm not letting number 12 off the hook. If you're going to be in the conversation with the greatest at the position, you have to win titles. When I look at Tom Brady throwing to anybody and everybody, but still getting his team to the winner's circle, I absolutely will not absolve Aaron Rodgers from blame. When you're the quarterback, and we talk about paying these guys big money, $30, $35 million, the expectation is that you're going to win. And the more that we pay the quarterback, the more that we expect him to elevate those around him. So, Marcellus, when you talk about those receivers, those second and third round receivers, that's a philosophical thing. That is what the Green Bay Packers have been doing since Ron Wolf. They believe they can develop them. The system gets them there. So I don't want to hear Aaron Rodgers hasn't had this. He hasn't had that. At some point, when you're the dude, you elevate the other guys around you. So, yes, it's a disappointment that he only has one title next to his name. And if he finishes with one, it's a major disappointment for someone that we.
So Drew Brees is a disappointment, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, if you're supposed to be one of the greatest, you got to win titles. That's what it's about. It's about the rings. If you don't have multiple rings, you can't do it. Tom Brady is considered the GOAT because of the rings, not because of the talent.
Wow. I wouldn't go there with Drew Brees.
Crazy.
Yeah. I wouldn't go there with Drew.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Peyton Manning won two Super Bowls. But look, Drew Brees has never been the MVP. Aaron Rodgers has been MVP twice. Aaron Rodgers, widely considered the most talented quarterback in NFL history. He's in a different category. Drew Brees, 6 foot, undersized, hurt his shoulder early in his career. He has overachieved. You can't knock him. It's not in the same category. I'm going to agree with Bucky here just based off of, look, man, this is the second coach that clearly has a little bit of an issue with Aaron Rodgers. For Matt LaFleur to spend one year with Aaron Rodgers and play with a guy that talented, who to me, with quarterbacks playing at close to age 40, to him to decide after year one, let's go out and get Jordan Love, another quarterback, that says something about Aaron Rodgers. I'm not trying to beat up on Aaron, but there is a quirk in his personality that you have to blame him a bit if he only gets one title during his career. Given the talent, the hype, and just the opportunities that he's had, I would have to blame Aaron Rodgers. All right, don't go anywhere. We're going to keep it rolling here on Speak for Yourself from the Crib. We're going to go visit a Hall of Famer, Tim Brown, the Oakland Raider great. Mm. We'll talk some Antonio Brown. We'll talk some Henry Ruggs and John Gruden. Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. That's my dog. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Wednesday, happy hump day. All right, let's roll out to Texas and a suburb right outside of Dallas, Texas. And let's be joined by one of the greatest wide receivers in football history, Heisman Trophy winner, Oakland Raider great Tim Brown. Tim, welcome to the show. Let's get right to your Las Vegas Raiders now. I want to start by asking you a question about John Gruden, who has a reputation for being really rough on quarterbacks. The Raiders have obviously went out and got Marcus Mariota this offseason. You played for John Gruden. Is he too rough on quarterbacks?
I don't think so, man. You know, you look what he did for Rich Gannon. You know, he turned Rich from a, you know, journeyman quarterback into a MVP of the league quarterback, man. So I think that alone just shows you how good it is. Now, you have to be mentally tough at that position anyway, but if you have a coach like Gruden, man, you really have to be mentally tough. Otherwise, you're not going to make it with him, no doubt about that.
Derek Carr, is he mentally tough enough for John Gruden? You still believe in Derek Carr. Tell us why.
Well, you know, Derek has, you know, he had Amari Cooper for a couple years, but I think really when you look at what happened there, you know, the relationship with Cooper and Carr really didn't pan out the way everybody wanted. But I don't think the guys really had a lot of talent around him other than Amari since he's been around him. So now he has a first-round pick. He has, you know, a running back. He has a great tight end. He doesn't have an excuse anymore. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to have to get it done this year. And what does that mean, getting it done? Does that mean they get to the Super Bowl? I don't know if it means all that. But certainly, you know, when you look back on the year, you can't look at Derek Carr and not be able to do a big check mark. Otherwise, you know, you may be looking at Marcus Mariota coming in or something like that in the future. So,
now, Tim, how different would the Raiders season have been if Antonio Brown had behaved?
You know, I mean, you know, Antonio is a game breaker, man. He's a big play guy. And when you look at the Raiders last year, the one thing that they missed was they missed the ability to make big plays. You know, they didn't have 40, 50, 60-yard touchdown plays. I think Derek Waller had the longest, you know, pass. And I think it was at Denver when he took a ball 60-some yards and he didn't score a touchdown. But, you know, so you need a receiver who can make those big plays. Whether it's a guy who can catch a 5 or 10 yarder and turn it into a 50 yarder, or a guy who can take the top off and make it happen. And Antonio has the ability to do both. So that was unfortunate, man. And it happened at a point when you couldn't go out and get somebody else. And that was a really bad thing about what happened with that whole situation. You couldn't go out and get another free agent of that level because it was time to go play football. So, you know, it was a big hurt. I mean, I'm sure Antonio is wishing things would have gone differently. And I know the Raiders do.
You think AB will ever be a number one receiver again?
Well, you know, you hope so, man. You know, you'd hate to see a guy with that kind of talent, man, all of a sudden, you know, just fall off the map and never be able to get it done again. You know, certainly it's going to be tough because he's going to have so many things coming at him. How do you handle those things? Can you handle them in a way that a team is going to put up with you the way you handle them? So, talent-wise, I mean, I don't think you lose talent in 1 year, but I don't know if he can sit out 2-3 years and then think he can come back in and light this league up. And, you know, there are too many young guys coming in. We saw that in this year's draft. How many receivers win the first two rounds? So, you know, at some point, teams are going to be willing to take a shot on these younger guys and go with a veteran guy who has problems.
Now, yourself and a few others excluded, what is it about the receiver position that makes so many of them divas?
Well, you know, look, I mean, you play a position where you're not supposed to get hit or, you know, you're not supposed to have a lot of contact, man. So you can talk all that noise because you can conceivably go through a game and never really get tackled, never really get dirty. So it's a lot easier to talk noise when you know your head is like get split open on every play, you know, so... you know, it's just the way it is, man. I mean, hey, some of the best trash talkers are guys who've never made the field as far as the Oakland Raiders are concerned. I mean, we had some guys who could really talk. they just never could get on the field. But, you know, I'm not surprised, man. You know, it's a position that, you know, people say it's a soft position, but it just depends on who's playing that position, I guess.
Now, your Raiders, you guys drafted your version of Tyreek Hill and Henry Ruggs. If you look at that decision, and it was based on others being evaluated higher, what do you think of that decision?
Well, you know, look, I mean, when I talked to Gruden and, you know, what he said to me was, man, we got to get some juice, man. We got to get some juice. And that meant to me he needed somebody like James Jett, like we had back in the day, a guy who could absolutely take the top off the defense anytime you wanted him to. And no matter if you threw him the ball or not, you had one guy on, and most of the time you had the safety trying to come over the top to make sure. And, you know, every once in a while we would throw James the ball, he'd make the play. So when a guy like, you got a guy like Ruggs who can not only take the top off, but, you know, catch that 10, 15 yarder and turn it into a touchdown, it's going to make it really tough. I mean, so now you got Derek Wallace, you got Williams, you got all these other guys, man, who you can get into the offense knowing that the top of the defense is going to be taken off because this guy is going to make sure that happens. So, you know, it's John Gruden at his best as far as I'm concerned. I think people understand that once the season gets going.
All right, Tim, you're one of the Raiders' all-time greats. I'm sure you keep in contact with other Raider greats. How do you and they feel about the move to Las Vegas? Excited or disappointed?
Well, probably a little bit of both, to be honest with you, man, because, you know, I think everybody wants to see the team stay in Oakland because that's where the history is and all that. But you're disappointed because, you know, you really feel as if the city of Oakland didn't stand up or the way they should have to make this thing happen. So from that standpoint, it was very disappointing. But I am super excited about the team being in Vegas, man. I'm telling you, it's going to be an incredible thing. For the first time, since I've known the Raiders, they have their own stadium, man. And, you know, I just think that is a remarkable feat in their legacy, and it's going to be an incredible thing, man. So, you know, I mean, now it's time to turn the page, right? We are the Vegas Raiders. You know, you look up Tim Brown and Oakland Raiders, it doesn't say that anymore. It's Las Vegas Raiders. So everything has been transferred over, and it's time to move on and get this thing done, man. But certainly, you know, there's some disappointment because, you know, guys wanted to be in Oakland. But it's time to move on and do what we have to do, and I think that's what this organization has done.
Speaking of remarkable feats, to make the Hall of Fame as a wide receiver – having caught passes from 19 different quarterbacks, you weren't Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin. You did it with a bunch of different guys. Am I wrong for saying that Jeff George is the greatest quarterback you ever played with?
Well, he's undoubtedly the best passing quarterback I played with, no doubt about it. The kid was remarkable, man, and being able to get the ball exactly where you wanted it. I remember when he first got to the Raiders, he said, "Hey, man, I noticed you run a lot of crossing routes. Where do you want the ball?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He said, "Where do you want the ball?" And I was like, "Well, can I get it, like, a foot in front of me?" He was like, "Okay, yeah, no problem." And I can tell you, man, every chance he had to get it there, that's what he did. He put the ball 1 foot in front of me and allowed me to run into the ball. So, the kid, he was unbelievable, man, no doubt about it, you know. And, you know, certainly Rich Gannon and I had an incredible 4 or 5 year run together, man. So, you know, without him, I'm definitely not sitting with this bus behind me over in my dining room over there. So, so he played a big part in me getting to the Hall of Fame, no doubt about it.
Tim, thank you for playing nice with my Jeff George question. It'll be good. I can call him tonight, and he'll be very, very pleased with me and you. Thank you so much for joining us. We got to keep it moving. We're going to go out to the Bay Area and talk to Rick Bucher. These college stars keep joining this new G League deal. I don't think it's good for the NBA. We'll talk about that with Rick Bucher. Dirt! Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, happy Wednesday. All right, let's roll out to the Bay Area, where we'll be joined by our NBA analyst and expert, Rick Bucher. Rick, the NBA has created this G League pathway program where it's really enticing a lot of these top high school stars. Deshaun Nix, the latest, the third big-time five-star high school basketball player, choosing the pathway program over 1 year in college basketball. The pathway program is not quite joining the G League. These guys are going to play in L.A., perhaps at the Mamba Academy. They'll play some G League teams. They'll travel overseas and play some top competition. A lot of people see this as progress. I see this as bad for the NBA. Anything that further damages college basketball to me is not good for the NBA. Marcellus, we'll start with you. Agree with me that the top players not playing college basketball actually not good for the NBA?
No, I don't agree with you. I think this is great for the NBA, and it's going to obviously have consequences at the collegiate level. But this intended shot was really at the NBL of Australia that was starting to poach that same collegiate talent, and they were foregoing their college experience to go to Australia for a year, didn't make it to the NBA. The NBA realized that, hey, the only way we could fix this is to really up the ante in terms of compensation, north of $500,000 for the top players, and also not just get better prospects, but better people. Let's get them around some coaching. Let's get them off the court in life skills academies and really groom them for their experience in the NBA. The collegiate experience in terms of college basketball was already being suppressed, was already being sabotaged by its own doing. We're not getting four-year starters that are top collegiate athletes and prospects anymore. Those are the one-and-dones. And in the one-and-done, you're not getting life skills. You're going to a meaningless class studying astrology that won't help you going forward. You're not learning anything off the court. And then on the court, a lot of evaluators say you have to open up a prospect from their collegiate ball game because of how the collegiate game is played. Pass, pass, perimeter, perimeter, pass, 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 run down the shot clock, finally shoot. And then you get to the NBA, you have to really open up that package and really let that play itself out. So I just think that the unintended consequence is that the collegiate game continues to suffer. And they weren't the initial target, but they have to suffer. But the NBA is going to prosper before it.
It's good, potentially great for the NBA. It's obviously bad for the NCAA. But collegiate sports and collegiate basketball did this to itself by being like newspapers, refusing to adapt or die. The idea that they're now open to the idea of guys being able to utilize their images for their own benefit is a little too late. I don't look at the NBA as having to solve the NCAA's problems. The issue was that they had the best players were not going to college if they weren't going to the G League or they were all going overseas. RJ Hampson, LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman did go and played three games, got a 12-game suspension and said it's not worth waiting that out to play. Anthony Edwards, NBA fans couldn't pick him out of a lineup as of right now. Wiseman, LaMelo Ball, and Edwards are the top three picks in this NBA draft. So ideally, I'd love to see the NCAA as a platform of exposure for players coming to the NBA. But the reality is that model is dead and gone. Kids are deciding now, I don't need that. So the NBA now has the opportunity to create exposure for people to get to know the kids coming up, to get to know Green, where they wouldn't have if they were going to the NBL. Nobody's seen LaMelo Ball play over there. Nobody saw RJ Hampton play over there. Again, I love the idea of college basketball being the platform that takes kids to the NBA and utilizing that to build their brand and their exposure. But Zion Williamson was a brand and was a YouTube highlight before he got to Duke. Did Duke help? Yes. But it didn't make Zion. And certainly nobody was watching Anthony Edwards at Georgia. So I believe that this is simply realizing the situation and adjusting to modern times and saying, look, if the talent's going to play, let's have the talent play for us.
We're all in agreement that the NCAA and college basketball is dying of self-inflicted wounds, bad leadership, a lack of vision. Totally agree with that. Here's where we disagree. The NBA should be trying to help the NCAA fix itself because there's great benefit. I'm just sorry. Zion Williamson was a nice little YouTube story. He was the second or third best prospect coming out of high school. Duke made him a superstar and a guy that could drive television ratings. The branding and the exposure and the hype that comes from participating in college basketball, which has 100 years worth of history, has a fan base, a passionate, loyal fan base. This pathway program, if the NCAA were smart and if the NBA were smart, they should be partnering together and giving up their top collegiate players for the summer to work with the NBA and the G League and the Summer League or whatever, pay the kids, the top players for participating in that during the summer, and then send the kids back to college basketball and let them continue to build their brand in a system that's already built. The G League is never going to create a Dick Vitale, who's a great person to help college basketball players build their brand. Again, not as Jay Billis, these other people, and these television networks that have a system built around college basketball. We're going to blow all that up, and none of these kids will ever come to the NBA with the kind of hype that Zion Williamson had, certainly with the kind of hype that Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan brought. When you start looking at why LeBron James has never been able to catch Michael Jordan as a brand or as a shoe endorser, he didn't have the college basketball experience. He didn't come in with the kind of brand and package that other superstar college players have brought to the NBA. The NBA benefits from college basketball. They should put these guys in a headlock and help them fix college basketball. Don't let just college basketball die on a vine of its own stupidity. It's why the NFL draft just had 16 million people watch it. It's why we all know who Jordan Love is. It's why we know who any of these guys. Joe Burrow, any of them, because of college football. Marcellus, I see you shaking your head. How do you disagree with that?
I think your argument is eating itself. Your comparisons are not analogous. One, in football, you have to be 20 years old, 3 years removed from high school. Because of that mandate, then you allow the hype machine to take course. But in college basketball, that's not the case. First, the NBA negotiated with the NBAPA and couldn't come to a conclusion on how to deal with the one and done rule. So basically in college, you're dealing with a 1 year sensation. And he's going to leave. And the NBA was trying to figure out, hey, do we even have to force these guys to go? Because the 2 year rule didn't work. So a lot of infighting between the three entities, they never came to a resolution. Then if you talked about the marketing of the hype coming out of college, these guys' hype is being suppressed more so than ever. Think about it. Who goes into the tournament and actually wins it of late? The Villanovas, the Virginias, the teams that have 3-4 year starters on them. Guess what? Those are not the best prospects. People are skipping that line like a LaMelo Ball will, because they're like, why go through this process and try to do team building for a hype exercise that is going to prove futile? You can still get hype and not even go to the college, let alone you're saying that Zion Williamson was made at Duke or really benefited. I'm here to say in a parallel universe, it would have been the same impact if he didn't go to Duke. But we'll never know if that's the reality. But because these guys are coming in with suppressed marketing compared to, like you said, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, this is a different game, different era. And because of social media, we know a guys who can skip
with
this
lower
process
television
rather
ratings,
than those who were
lower.
Forced to invest it.
NBA is not as popular as when the guys played college basketball. But go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's different reasons for that.
I love your idea, Jason. And if the NCAA could put its arms around what developing players and giving them some money, I'd be all for it. But the NCAA has demonstrated that they're not willing to do that. So from the NBA's perspective, it's All right, so how do we prevent our talent from going places that people are not going to see it play and that ultimately we don't have control over? It is better for the quality of basketball for these guys to be put in a professional setting right away. They're going to get better playing against G League competition, against professional competition, against guys who can match their athleticism than they will playing at the collegiate level. And so I like that. And I have to believe, and I understand the exposure element, but in this day and age, the ability to put out in the way that we do digitally, the exposure of athletes, there's a way for the NBA to get around this and allow people to see the young talent that's going to the development program in the G League and allow people to get to know it and to follow it. Because the reality is, the vast majority of people are watching on their devices at this point anyway. So I worry about the socialization. Rick, I think that's an important part of going to college, and we're going to miss out on that, and I hope that the NBA pays attention to that. I don't know if you can get it done. Major League Baseball players, for me, are the worst because they go straight from high school to the minor leagues. They're only surrounded by other baseball players in baseball. They don't mature. They don't develop. And then you got to go talk to them and deal with them, or they got to go out there in the public and they're doofuses. I don't want to lose that. The NBA players
one of the biggest, have always been one ahead of the biggest myths we so have in America.
Football players, because of that.
Biggest myth we have in America is that the internet and social media and digital is going to save the world, and we're all going to make money, and it's going to fix everything, and everything's going to be better. And it's all BS. It's all bull crap. And that's why people sit around and think the NBA is somehow a competitor to the NFL. And it's not. We just watched 16 million people watch a damn draft. It blows everything away. The NBA is not as popular as it used to be the further and further they get away from having college basketball stars come into their sport. Someone, if the media pressured college football into having a playoff, if we put some real pressure on the NCAA, anybody could expose them how stupid they are and how much money they're going to cost themselves by not coming to some type of partnership with the NBA. Let these guys go make $500,000 playing for the NBA during the offseason and still let them come play college basketball. Keep the best of both worlds so that true superstars join the NBA, help grow the league. The facts are the facts. The league hasn't been as popular since Michael Jordan left, and we can hype LeBron James, and everybody can be a groupie for LeBron James, but he doesn't compare to the stars of yesteryears in terms of moving the needles, in terms of moving shoes, in terms of being a brand, and it's because these guys are removed from the college basketball experience. We got to keep it rolling. Brady Quinn's going to join us next. I'm going to return to the NFL, the king of all sports that isn't remotely reliant on the internet or social media for its popularity. NFL's not in the myths, it's in the reality. Stick around. More Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. As they tweet out right now. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's roll out to Brady Quinn's crib. Brady Quinn's crib. Had some technical difficulties. Brady's going to join us by the phone. All right, Deion Sanders made some interesting comments about Cam Newton. Deion saying Cam is too talented to be a backup quarterback anywhere. Cam should try to force his way to Jacksonville. Brady, get us rolling here. Is Cam Newton too talented to accept a backup quarterback position this offseason?
I think when healthy, yes. And that's the biggest question. I mean, from all the things that he's put out there on social media, he looks healthy. He looks like he's closer to 100%. But, you know, no team really knows until they get their doctors and trainers in there to run him through a physical and probably a workout to make sure that that's the case. But at 30 years old, he's won an MVP before he's taken his team to the Super Bowl. You know, I think his mindset should be waiting for the right opportunity for him to go start, because that's the type of player he is. And I don't think he's to a point in his career where he wants to go take a backseat to someone else, because I just don't think that's who he is. I think he's an alpha. I don't know that he'd want to sit in a quarterback room watching someone else play in front of him that he probably knows and thinks he's better than. So I think he might have to wait a little while if Jacksonville or New England or some of these other teams that we look at and think they could use him, but they'll want him. he might have to wait until an injury. And honestly, that may be his best road to getting back behind center for this upcoming season.
What Deion said was great analysis, but it was bad advice. Just because if you look at it, it's great analysis. You shouldn't see Cam Newton on the bench next year, even coming off of the injury-plagued seasons he's had. He's still too talented in terms of what he can bring to a team to be a backup. That said, it's bad advice because you got to get in where you fit in. And this is no time to go out there and let the ego lead your way. If this is your harsh reality, you got to accept it because you do not want to continue to have this fight and then you don't have an opportunity. Cam Newton will go into any situation and put pressure on any starter if he's a backup. So great analysis in terms of talent, but bad advice in terms of what he needs to do.
Yeah, I got nothing to add to what you just said, Marcellus. I think that's the perfect analysis. Let's move on to Jameis Winston, who's made an interesting comment about moving to the Saints on a one-year deal. He says playing for Sean Payton and with Drew Brees, he's going to get a Harvard education on quarterback play. Brady, is this in any way a shot at Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I don't think so. I mean, look, if Sean Payton and Drew Brees are a Harvard education, maybe Bruce Arians, Stanford, Dartmouth, one of those Ivy Leagues, I don't know. I mean, they did lead the league in passing yards last season. I think you can look throughout the course of Bruce Arians' career, and he's been able to put up yards and numbers within his offense, with, regardless of who the quarterback was. So I don't think it's so much as a shot. I just think it's the reality of maybe what he's looking at trying to do, trying to reinvent himself in a way and get rid of some of the mistakes and flaws in his game and learn from one of the greatest ever do in Brees and learn from one of the best head coaches in the NFL right now in Sean Payton. So I actually think this could be one of the best decisions he's ever made in his career, is to take a year where he plays as a backup. Who knows a year from now if it doesn't turn into him maybe being the future at the quarterback position for the Saints or being able to go in and play well and then roll this into a bigger contract like Teddy Bridgewater did a year ago. But, you know, either way, I think this is going to be, again, one of the best decisions that he could potentially make in his career moving forward.
Yeah, I think it was a shot. Not only is he taking a shot at Bruce Arians, but it seemed like Brady Quinn taking a shot at Columbia. You didn't mention us in that long list of Ivy League teams, and obviously we're one of those as well. That said, it's a smart play, but I think before he took the shot, the gun went off in his hand. In his summation of how this is going to be the new Harvard, he started to name people in that room like Taysom Hill. Come on, guys. Like, I think that he wasn't being as genuine as you should be in this situation. And he wanted to say, look, I'm going to the best quarterback room developer in the NFL, which means there's others that are worse. And he's only been one other place. So he's taking a shot at them, unfortunately. I think this is the time, if you're going to be a backup, to not make those type of headlines because it won't serve you well at the end.
Look, not everybody's built for the Ivy League. And that's what Jameis is going to find out. Take someone like me with my SAT around 900. I was built for Ball State, not for the Ivy League. That's what Jameis is going to learn here. It's great he's going to that Ivy League school, quarterback school, but has he really got the necessary SAT score for those qualifications in New Orleans? He might not. All right, stick around. Uncle Jimmy's just around the corner, and we're going to talk our approval rating for Aaron Rodgers. Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
All right, speak for yourself from the crib. More after this. Right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Happy Wednesday. All right, let's move out to Uncle Jimmy's crib and find out what he thinks about our discussion about Aaron Rodgers. We had a spirited discussion. I think Aaron Rodgers is on his way out of Green Bay in the next 12 months. Uncle Jimmy, what say you?
Hey, man, look here. Let me tell you something, man. You always got to be the one that looks for the male scapegoat in the room. You hear what I'm trying to say? And right now, you trying to find somebody to blame. You trying to find somebody to blame if Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers don't win another Super Bowl. I'm going to tell you who the hell to blame. That's easy. You blame Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs if they don't win another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't give a damn if they got Jordan Love, Jordan Sparks, or Montel Jordan. It ain't going to make a damn. They got to come to the land of the Kansas City Chiefs. And you best believe that that's the truth, bro. Yes, sir. This is how we do it. You
you.
Right.
Yeah. You know what? That's some of your best work. Yeah. Yeah.
Call me over Jordan. Just the way it is, brother.
Come on, big girl. I'm a little down on him.